В эфире Ruboradio.com.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Let me just remind you that you're listening to Russian Boston Radio. This is another rare opportunity to talk to one of our Boston mayor candidates for mayor, Michael Ross. Michael, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good to be with you.
Good afternoon, Michael. I'm very glad that we had an opportunity to talk. I know that you're busy with elections starting tomorrow. What's the atmosphere in your headquarters?
Sure, absolutely. I'm really glad to be able to talk to you and to your listenership. The Russian community has been an integral part of, I mean, not even my career, but really in a large way, a good part of my life, and I can tell you more about it. But to answer your question, the atmosphere is great. We really think that there's going to be a huge turnout tomorrow, and we think it's going to be broader than what people are talking about. We think it's going to be a big election. Even though it's just a municipal primary, it's so much more than that. This is the first time that Bostonians in 20 years will be able to choose the new direction of their city. And we're offering a very clear choice about that direction, about the future, about a generational change. And, we think that's going to have a huge impact in the election tomorrow. We think we're going to win.
Well, that's great. we hope that you're going to win also. Can you tell us more about yourself and about your campaign to our listeners, what to expect?
I have a very interesting story about how, I came to even get into public policy and in the first place. I'm the city councilor from Back Bay, Beacon Hill, Fenway, and Mission Hill. Those are the districts I represent, and I'm the former president of the Boston City Council. And, a lot of the reasons why I'm in government at all has to do with, where my family is from and our story as a family. And a lot of that has to do with my father, Steve Ross, who survived the Holocaust, was rescued by American soldiers, came here as an immigrant, and made it in America. Started with absolutely nothing, and like so many of the people from the Russian community, built a life, rebuilt a life, really. And, that's informed a lot of who I am. It's informed my public policy, and that I believe the American dream needs to be available for all people. It needs to be possible. It doesn't have to be easy, but it has to be possible. And, that's what I believe in.
That's great. So you understand Russian like nobody else out of the all candidates that we have. So, what are your major plans for the campaign if you're going to become a mayor?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm looking to bring innovative solutions to create jobs, to modernize city government, to improve education, and to move Boston forward. Real big picture vision for our city. We have a great foundation that's been set by Tom Menino, and these last 20 years, Boston is a better and a different city than it was 20 years ago. We have a new set of challenges and opportunities that we have to meet face on, head on. And a lot of that to me has to do with growing our economy, growing our jobs, growing our housing, growing our public transportation, creating better access to housing, to transit, to jobs. Partnering with Cambridge and bringing macroeconomic jobs back to the city of Boston, as opposed to kind of fighting with Cambridge, for example. We have to create new opportunities in neighborhoods that today aren't considered places where, new people are moving to. I just came from Mattapan. I was doing some campaigning in Mattapan. That's a community that's craving development for new businesses, supermarkets, restaurants, places to go. So part of our, you know, my agenda is to obviously focus on education, but it's not just education. It's also the community development of neighborhoods to make sure that all of our neighborhoods are strong, vibrant places. So that's kind of the big picture of what I'm talking about in this campaign. And I think it's a vision that people are interested in. We have a very, you know, robust set of policy proposals. I mean, I don't know, over 100 pages of policy initiatives that are on our website at mikeforboston.com, and I encourage people to take a look at that. There's also a whole suite of videos where, you know, people have asked me questions or we've put out certain policy positions. We can just easily see a quick 30-second video of what distinguishes me from me and my colleagues who are also running for mayor.
And what's the website again?
Mike for Boston, forboston.com.
Mikeforboston.com. We should definitely share it with our listeners. Talking about education, you were saying that you want to change dramatically the not just high schools but middle schools also. And the question is, what your perfect school looks like? What exactly do you expect to change in school system that we have existing right now?
Well, we have different schools in our city. You know, we have some schools that have waiting lists of 200-300 people, and we have some schools that don't have any waiting lists and that aren't performing. So on one level, we have to meet the demand in parts of our city where parents are scrambling to get into schools. And in another, we have to take the schools that are falling behind and make them better and fix them and repair them and radically change them. You know, I would start there. I would start with the school that needs most help. And I would make available early education opportunities for students of that school and then broaden that across the city. It's proven that preschool, that K-1, K-0, and creating a universal preschool in our city, that these are pathways for young children to get ahead, and they're ways to allow young people to move forward. We also need to expand our electives in our schools by creating a longer school day. We need to add art, music, gym, physical education to our school day, and we just don't have enough time in the day to do it, so we have to extend the day. And we need a technical vocational school in our city that is stronger and better. You know, we're not on a cornfield here. We're in the city of Boston. This is a city that has an amazing medical industry and, you know, technical and, you know, entrepreneurial community that is strong and vibrant. We should have a tech folk high school that is training our kids in careers of today and tomorrow. And we're not doing that. And we need to. And at night, that school needs to reopen so that parents and grandparents can get job training opportunities themselves so that they're taking advantage of schools in our city.
Another thing you have been talking recently, and I read actually several publications in the newspapers and online, that you are greatly planning to expand the population of Boston by creating a lot of living units, so building more houses. And in addition to new schools and new houses, that's really, really expensive. So where do you expect this money to come from?
Well, I agree with you that expanding some of the resources that I'm talking about in our schools will cost money. But I disagree that creating housing is expensive. Creating housing actually will bring revenue to our city, and that's how we're going to pay for our schools. We have to expand the tax base. We have to build more housing. And to do that, we have to do what I did and what we did in the neighborhood that I represent today, which is the Fenway community. I think you and many of your listeners may remember Fenway was a different neighborhood 10 years ago. It was gas stations, it was parking lots, it was fast food restaurants. Today, it's 2 million square foot of development. 2 square feet of development. It's $2 billion invested into that neighborhood. It's bringing in hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars in tax revenue that we didn't have before by simply planning as a community and building more housing. And there's an insatiable demand right now to build housing in our city. You see it at open houses. You see it when condominiums are on the market or when rental units are on the market. With condos, you see people getting into bidding wars with each other. You know, above asking price offers. A very competitive market. Now, that's good that we have a good economy and a strong economy, but it's challenging that we're not building enough housing to meet that demand. And so what's happening is we're just seeing neighborhoods shift and change. You're seeing gentrification occur instead of seeing real development and real growth. I think there's an opportunity to grow Boston. Presently, we have 630,000 people living in the city approximately. You know, in the not-too-distant future, I really think we could be a city that approaches a larger number. I've thrown out the figure 1 million in 12 years. It's not out of the realm of possibility to head in that direction. If we did do that by building affordable housing, market rate housing, student housing, senior housing, we would create lots of income. We would create far more opportunities for people to move here and live here. And you wouldn't see the same gentrifying forces because it wouldn't be the choice of pushing people out of neighborhoods because it'd be enough housing for everyone.
Well, talking about housing and everything, I actually received a question yesterday from one of our listeners who asking about the situations on the roads. The question was that this lady, she was planning to move into Boston since her husband found a job there, but they were stopped by the fact that they have 2 cars, and they mostly using 2 cars, and they simply wouldn't have enough space to park those 2 cars, and even if they spend some more money for parking them, the city roads and everything are always packed, and they can't really use those cars. So don't you think that we would have to expand the road system and public transportation system, and how do you plan to do that?
I do. The one thing we really can't do is add more parking spaces, but what we can do is make it more desirable for people to use alternative forms of transportation, like public transportation, like bicycle transportation. That would allow your friend who sent the email to probably have better access with their car, because some people will always use their car. But there's a lot of people who are on the bubble, you know, who rather not pay for a car, but just can't get around any other way. They work at a job where the MBTA shuts down at 12:15, 12:30. They can't get home because their job may end at 1 or 2 or 3 in the morning. Perhaps they work in a restaurant. Perhaps they work as a third shift worker in a hospital. You know, there's others who can't get around because the MBTA doesn't go, you know, through their neighborhood. Or there are people who say they live in East Boston, and it's just far too difficult to travel with your bicycle. We need to create access in all those areas. You know, the fact that the MBTA is a state agency is no longer an excuse for the next mayor of the city of Boston. The MBTA has to be our problem, and it certainly will be mine. When I was elected in 99, one of the first things I worked on was creating the Night Owl service with a group of students and with a group of third shift workers. We got it for about 3.5-4 years. And for that period of time, you could hop on public transit in the city of Boston till about 3:30 in the morning. It was great while it lasted, but they since discontinued it. We have to bring that back. How do we pay for these things? Well, one thing that we need to do is we need to have a U-Pass program, U-Pass.
What is U-Pass?
U-Pass is where students from area colleges get a reduced fare Charlie card, their access to the MBTA. And it's a policy of the college itself so that every college kid who goes to that school has to pay for this card, part of their tuition. They get a real significant deep discount for the Charlie card. And then the MBTA gets an infusion of cash. lot of cities do this. We estimate that it will raise as much as $50 million a year. The night owl service, which is open till, which would be open till about 3:30 in the morning, that costs about $10 million. We'd still have $40 million to bring in new infrastructure improvements and new capital improvements and new expanded improvements into the MBTA. We have to do it. The other thing is that the city of Boston may have to contribute some funds. I mean, you know, we now have a small restaurant tax. I think it's about 0.75% for the city right now. If we expand restaurants, you know, out into the evening so that, you know, because of the increased capacity, that will bring in more revenue. Maybe we turn some of those funds over. But whatever it is, we have to find a way to expand the hours of the MBTA and expand the services of the MBTA. And with bicycles as well, we have to have more dedicated bike paths, more protected bike paths that can't be, you know, infiltrated by car doors or by other forms of traffic, and a better network across the entire city that connects not just to downtown, but connects to individual neighborhoods, including neighborhoods like East Boston, which we're going to need to offer a dedicated cycle track from Boston's mainland through Chelsea into East Boston. And it should be just a predictable, easy-to-travel roadway that makes it simple for people to get around.
Do you think that would be expensive to build?
Well, all these priorities cost money. But I will have a plan to build and to do these things, as well as to have the continued disciplined bond rating and strong finances that the city has had.
Another question that I have, since the population of Boston, you're predicting that is going to grow up to 1 million, like any big city is going to cause its, like the dark side of it with the crime and everything. So what would be your way to deal with it?
Well, I mean, you know, there's always opportunity. With increased population, you have, you know, cities by definition are considered an end. Glaser, the professor from Harvard, called it cities man's greatest invention. You know, they're considered efficient. Cities are by definition efficient. You know, we live kind of in a more dense area. You know, it's more environmentally efficient. Everything's right where you need it. There's not a lot of traveling needed in general. If you just want to go down to the store and pick up some milk or what have you, you know, you just walk right out, you pick it up. You know, there's some real efficiencies. And with those efficiencies create opportunities, including in public safety. You know, cities by, you know, yes, there's a lot of people, but that sense of community and those sense of people also create a sense of safety. You know, when you know your neighbors, when you have access to a strong community. Strong communities occur when people are active, when there are jobs, when there is opportunity. They occur when yes, there's a strong connection for our police department with our community. You know, the community, the most valuable information that, the most valuable resource that a police officer has is information. Knowing when a crime is going to occur before it occurs is only going to be brought about by information. If a police officer has to, you know, react to a crime, that's already too late. So it's information that strengthens communities. Well, how do you get that information? Through community policing, through having a strong relationship with our police department, with our broader community.
Another question I have received from one of our listeners, well, the background is back in Russia, and we're talking about a Russian-speaking community here, which isn't that big, but it's still growing, and according to my knowledge, there are about 80,000 Russian-speaking living in a greater Boston area. We're not talking about Boston. I don't have exact information on that. But are you planning to have any more after-school activities outside the school? Because back in Russia and the former Soviet Union, we used to have a lot of this after-school like clubs, and they used to call Pioneer House or Pioneer Castles, where you can come and there are a lot of like art,
technical things going on, and all after school activities was happening here. I mean, there. It's a little bit different here, but don't you think that might be useful for if you're expecting to have more people and more people to go to those schools?
Yeah, I mean, I think we really can learn from some of the history of, you know, your community. You know, I don't want to make generalizations, but when I've been interacting with the Russian community here in Boston, it's such a, you know, cultured and involved and engaged community. I mean, everything from, you know, a strong appreciation for all forms of music and symphony and you know, art, culture, and, you know, then there's, you know, his propensity for great chess and excellent sportsmen. And just, there's been a huge, I think, investment with your country in the past in these areas. And it's something that we're not doing at the same level at all here in America. And it's certainly not occurring to the extent that it could here in Boston. And we need to, and as I said earlier, to expand our school day so that we can create after-school opportunities, not after-school opportunities, but opportunities throughout the school day to broaden that base of kind of these electives, physical education, art, music, gym. These are things that, you know, dance. And these are things that we really should be teaching in our schools, but we just don't have enough time. So my model would be to expand the school day to create partnerships with some of our nonprofits and with some of our cultural activities and to try to make, you know, far more options for our young people. And then we need to create, you know, even a stronger set of options for our disengaged youth in our communities around after-school programs, around community centers, around music clubhouses. And there are some neighborhoods that have a significant infrastructure in this area, and there are others that do not. And we really have to make those investments, because if we don't make those investments, we're going to have problems down the road with some of our youth.
Another question with expanding the city that I just received, actually. What about the parks and open spaces that we have that probably would be built with the houses? And do you think those kids will have enough room to play outside and spaces to play outside?
Yeah, I mean, density can only take you so far. You can't have density at the expense of open space and at the expense of trees and, you know, areas to recreate, play, and gather and go. But without enough density, you don't have those spaces being used. They become dead spaces. They become unwanted spaces. So there's a balance. But clearly, there are parts of our city where we just don't have that density, where we don't have those levels of housing. And I think the most obvious places to start would be around our existing transit ways. We have a very recent investment that had been made along the Fairmont line. The Fairmont line is a commuter rail that had been also converted to become a light rail or a rapid rail transit system for just regular Boston residents commuting into the city. And it runs from Hyde Park through Mattapan to Dorchester to downtown Boston. And the entire transit way is just craving for more housing. And that's not a place where there's a lot of density. In fact, there's virtually none. And so there's an opportunity to create housing from downtown Boston all the way out to Hyde Park. I think we can create 10,000 units. And there'll still be opportunities all along the way to access our park systems, you know, which we actually have a fairly good infrastructure here in Boston per capita.
Well, thank you very, very much for finding time in your busy schedule to talk to us. Is there anything else you want to address to our listeners?
Well, I mean, I just want to say that, you know, I have a very strong connection to the Russian community. You know, my grandparents on my mother's side came from Russia. And, you know, when I was younger, I spent a lot of time in Hebrew school. We were dealing with issues around the refusnik issue in the story. And you know, at a very young age, I realized, you know, the power of social activism and how, you know, and how through the lens of really reaching out, that we're a much smaller world than we realize. And, you know, learning about families in Russia that were seeking to come to America, and how we are here in America, we have this melting pot that we have to respect the cultures of, you know, of all of us. And we have to really believe that the American dream means upward mobility. We have to preserve that upward mobility. It doesn't mean that it should be easy to make it in America, but it shouldn't be impossible, and we should always think about that. And I just really appreciate the many, many contributions that the Russian people have made to our world and to our country and to our region. They continue to have a very positive effect on the Boston and Greater Boston and New England area, and I'm very proud to have the connections I do to your community.
Thank you very much. Good luck on a preliminary tomorrow, and I hope we would have an opportunity to speak again with you as a mayor of Boston.
I hope so, too. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Одна маленькая девочка не слушала Руба Радио.
Не будь маленькой девочкой, слушай Руба Радио.